I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, can our producer, Tashima, just tell you about the film that wore her down? But first, every so often, you want to talk things over with someone who's not just smart, but wise. That's why we created Wisdom Watch, where we ask some of our most respected elders to guide us through challenging and important issues. Today, Charles Burnett. He may be the most influential filmmaker you've never heard of. He's the winner of a MacArthur Genius Award. He's worked with some of Hollywood's biggest stars. And his most respected work, which started out as a film school project, was one of the first 50 films to be included in the Library of Congress's National Film Registry. And yet for 30 years, it was rarely seen. We're pleased to be joined by filmmaker Charles Burnett from NPR West.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
So how sick are you of being called the most famous filmmaker nobody ever heard of?
It's strange, and it's a paradox because, being the most famous filmmaker no one's heard of is kind of strange.
But if you open up any sort of treatise on, you know, important works in film, you're in it. And yet, most people have never seen your signature work. You think that's probably right?
Yes.
Does that hurt?
No.
No.
No, because I think originally the film was never meant to be shown theatrically. And it was just a student film, and it was made for a small group of people. And I never imagined it to go beyond that.
Well, let's let people in on what we're talking about, if they're not aware. I'm talking about your 1977 film, Killer of Sheep. It's a movie that's centered on family life in South Central Los Angeles in the 1970s. I'd like to play a short clip from the introduction.
You are not a child anymore. You soon will be a man. Now, start learning what life is about now, son.
So hard to just play a clip of a film like this. First of all, it's beautifully shot. It's in black and white. It's very, what's the word you would use, sort of impressionistic. It's just it really is something that has to be seen to be fully experienced. Do you agree?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So how did you get the idea for the film?
I grew up in a neighborhood, but having gone to school, you sort of changed, you know, in many ways. And, you know, at the time, it was this notion that you were a spokesman for the black community and so forth, if you can believe that. And you realized soon that that wasn't the case. And so if you wanted to represent the people, you had to represent them in an objective way and let the story speak for itself. And this is like a slice of life. And the film poses the question, how would you help Stan? How can you help his situation without the film telling you to do ABC?
And Stan being the Stan is the protagonist.
The
title comes from the fact that he works in a slaughterhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So how did it happen that it did get released?
It first screened at Howard University, and it was some conference that was going on, and that's how the film took off really. Then UCLA Archives, less than 10 years ago, restored the print, and then that's when Milestone got involved and wanted to distribute the film.
You were born in 1944 in Vicksburg, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. What did you want to do when you were growing up?
I mean, I wanted to be, a pilot in the beginning. But I have a speech impediment, so I was told that, you know, you'll never be a pilot because of that, you know, and that sort of crushed my world in a way. And then I was playing a trumpet, and then I got into electronics and thought I was going to be an engineer and things like that. But I remember mostly about that period was I was disenchanted with the school system. And I realized then that there was something going on that was damaging young kids and not nurturing. And I remember saying that I'd like to write about this someday, I'll talk about this someday. And
you that's must have gone to segregated schools. Forgive me. You must have gone to segregated schools.
Well, I grew up in Los Angeles, and the schools were segregated there, believe it or not. L.A. was just like the South in more ways than one. But it wasn't like you had blocks and blocks of predominantly black areas.
How do you think that affected your filmmaking, your art?
Well, looking back, what you realize that there's no images of black people. If you went to school in the South to some degree, you had a better chance of being aware of black contributions. In L.A., you got, basically the history of white people and their accomplishments, you know. There was no images about people of color. And when you get older, you realize, the history, the things we've done, there's so much there, you know, that needs to be exposed.
You know what's funny about your career is that most people think of, you know, the young filmmakers as being sort of all full of energy and that they kind of slow down and rest on their laurels as they get older. But you've actually been more productive as you've gotten older. Why is that?
I don't know if I've been more productive. I've been struggling all the time, you know.
Well, you put out more films.
Not as much as I like. Like most independent filmmakers, it's far and in between before you make a film. You know, I wish I would make a film every year, every other year.
Well, you've done some films like After Killer of Sheep. Mm-hmm. You did My Brother's Wedding, which was also a kind of a small release, a sort of small film. But you also did To Sleep with Anger mm-hmm. with Danny Glover. It was a relatively, for you, a big budget film, which many people consider a classic. You also did the, as a made for TV movie with from Oprah Winfrey Productions, The Wedding. How do you see those projects? Do you get as much satisfaction out of them? Do you feel like you're compromising when you do films like that that are meant to be more commercial?
Well, yes, you're always compromising in that sense. Because there's someone looking over your shoulder, you have to write a script and get it approved, and it's always evaluated. And every step of the way, someone is always, you know, staring on your back. I think, but you have to learn to work within those conditions, you know. And that's the art of filmmaking, I think.
One of the themes of your work, if you don't mind my calling it that, is the idea of how the modern world kind of alienates us from ourselves. In Killer of Sheep, I think one of the things that people who like the film love are the small moments of grace and joy. There's a moment when, you know, Stan sort of holds the coffee cup against his cheek.
What does it remind you of when you hold it next to your cheek? Didn't it remind you of when you're making love, a warm euphoria it gets sometimes?
It's a wonderful memory. He's dancing with his wife in the kitchen. It's a wonderful moment, and it's just these little moments that give grace to his otherwise very difficult life. And To Sleep with Anger, which is a film I think might be your most widely known film because it's easy to get. It has a big star, Danny Glover and Shirley Ralph. One of the themes deals with this whole question of remaining true to the roots.
My daddy never gave me anything without my having to sweat for it. Every summer, we had to pimp all of Big Mama's 100-odd laying hands and go to church all day on Sunday.
And I just wonder if there's something you want to tell us about that, why you think that matters.
Well, I think it's important, and having a foundation is really key to one's survival in a way. And we had that kind of culture in my neighborhood, you know. We had a porch life. We had people who were from the South, and everyone knew almost everyone on the block and a couple of blocks beyond that, you know. But years later, you find that that's absent now in a certain sense. And then you so relate that to the problems in the neighborhood, you know. And so I remember myself walking home one day, and I had this really urge to get some greens, some mustard greens or collard greens or something like that. When I was a kid, I hated that stuff, you know. And for some reason, I couldn't live another moment without it. So I rushed to the store and bought some. Didn't know how to cook them. I just put them in the hot water and just cooked them and ate them as they were. And I thought about that. I said, where did that come from? And other things like whistling some tunes that my mother used to play a lot, you know. And I had to track them down and realize, oh, this is where these melodies that's running around your head are coming from. And then when I did Killer Sheep, there's all this music I used, and they created these images, helped to create these images.
You are not the only African-American artist who's concerned about a sense of loss of relationship with the past. I know this is a big concern of August Wilson's in his plays. But there are some people who feel that, you know, people in the black community sometimes bludgeon each other with the past. You know, keeping it real is this big preoccupation of some, and that's kind of a way to keep people in line in a way that sometimes is not helpful. There's a lot about the past that really could be left behind. You know, the way children are sometimes treated with a kind of a brutality that, in fact, that you capture very, very starkly into Killer of Sheep. I mean, your opening scene is a parent slapping a young boy across the face. So I guess what I'm saying is there's a lot about the past that African Americans have experienced in this country that really is best left behind. And I don't know. I guess I just wonder, why is nostalgia so important to so many African American artists?
Personally, if we should forget about the past, I mean, other cultures are very much aware of their past, and they celebrate their past, you know, their ancestries and things like that, and they worship it. I think we're the only ones who have this sort of denial, I think, and self-hate, If you look at these stories and these people who survived, there's so much wealth in the past, things that can inform us in many ways. When I read slave narratives, I'm just amazed. And it just gives me strength because I realize that these people have gone through such hardships and survived that, I mean, I can't complain. But I think these people have to be looked at in sort of heroic terms because we're here because of what they did.
What do you say to young filmmakers coming up to today? Very different world than the world you started in. Very different movie business than the one you started out in the 70s. Any message you have for them?
Well, it's hard because when we were in film school, there was no dream or idea about going to Hollywood, really. So I think we had an advantage of doing a lot of experimentation and growing. It's very difficult to find your voice. It's very difficult to explore your own sensibilities and things like that. It's always someone else's material. It's always someone else taking your concepts and reworking them into to be an extension of their ideas and things like that. And I think it's a problem. I think it's a problem with art if you can't develop ideas of your own, you know, and can't make mistakes and survive and things like that. And this business doesn't allow for that. It's all about time management and saying the right things to the right people and that sort of thing.
How have you stayed at it all these years?
I'm not that successful at it, to tell you the truth. I mean, I just barely do, in a sense, you know. You know, you have kids in college, you know, you wonder where you're going to pay for this tuition, you know, things like that. You know, some people, it's not an issue, but for me, it's you know. So I, because of that, I look at myself on one level as doing okay in terms of developing my craft, but financially, I haven't been that successful.
If you had to do it over again, if you were starting your career today?
I wouldn't be in film if I started my career today, to be honest with you.
You think your era has passed?
Well, things are cyclic and they come back. If someone breaks through with a decent film or something like that and it starts making money, I think the thing has to be where an art film has to do very well at the box office. And they can. I mean, I was quite surprised that what Milestone did with Killer of Sheep, in a sense. And it's not a film.
In re-releasing it.
Yes, and it did very well. And it's not a film for everybody, I'm sure, but there's films I've done that have gotten poor release, and they looked at as being failures in a way, as opposed to looking at what were the problems in releasing the film.
Well, there's hope. Film. Well, yeah. At least The Killer of Sheep's been released. There's hope.
Oh, yes.
It's being seen actually fairly widely now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What are you working on now?
Well, we just finished a film in Namibia about the liberation movement of Southwest Africa. It follows the life, to some extent, of Sam Nyoma. But it's basically about the people's movement of Namibia to gain their independence. It's a very long film.
Okay. Sounds interesting. I look forward to it.
Good.
Charles Burnett is an independent filmmaker. He's based in Los Angeles. He joined us from NPR West in Culver City, California. Mr. Burnett, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
I'm sure someone may answer my call, and this bitter earth may not, oh, be so bitter.